You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Episode 427, After the Whistle, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close. How was your coffee and Sabres this morning, Craig? So I texted you last night at 10:15 and said, are you watching this game? And the no response was a clear indication that the timer was set on the coffee pot and the game would be watched in the morning.
Well, I will say this, that I did not have coffee this morning. I have a slight little nasally cold, which I'm totally fine with because I've been super healthy for a while now, and I got a little sniffle, and I'm okay with that. But I didn't want to drink the coffee this morning. I just pounded lots of water, and I did watch the game.
I have a takeaway. If you're
okay, yeah, I'd like to hear that.
Here's my takeaway from the game, because, I mean, we have to just get right into it. The elephant in the room was the goaltending conversation, right?
Yes.
And was it the right move or the wrong move to start Devon Levi or not play UPL? Devon Levi did not cost the Sabres the game. The first goal, people are complaining that it shouldn't have counted because the goaltender interference. No, the puck, he's got to have that. That's the one where I'm sitting and saying, well, that's an experience, and I don't know what it is. It's me trying to find an excuse to point the finger for sure.
Right.
I'll absolutely admit that. And it gave us one. Are you fucking kidding me? That gave us a reason to point the finger. But I don't know that UPL would have made some of those other saves. There were some point blank shots that Devon Levi saved, and you're just kind of like, fuck, how did he get that?
Yeah.
So it's not like
he's pretty poised.
So the one that bobbles over his leg, and then the rebound that he gave up that Pettersson finished off top corner, you know, whatever. Your team's got to score you three goals. So what? And you put up six the night before. Your team, your big guns got to show up, and they got to put fucking pucks in the net. Can't just be your defenseman. That's all I'll say. But there's no reason for me to feel that UPL would have changed the outcome of that game.
How good is Vancouver? When you look at the Buffalo Sabres, and then you look across at the Vancouver Canucks, what do you see? Like, do they have an absolute ton of household names on the forward line? I don't think they do. but they have elite superstars, right? Like, I mean, Elias Pettersson is fantastic hockey player. 82 points already this year, 33 goals. He's a hell of a hockey player. Miller, incredible hockey player. Their defense core as a whole is very good. Like that Roenick. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Not your, yeah.
45 points.
Yeah, and he tried goals. To fucking fight Tyson Jost.
Okay. And I was praying to Jost, Lord, you weren't going to bring that up.
No, I tweeted last night from the show account. Tyson Jost is coming up today. And I was like, he's the new scapegoat. No, he's not the fucking scapegoat. But when you're down and you can get a guy like Roenick off the ice for 5 minutes and you're Tyson Jost and you've been overpaid $2 million all fucking year and you're literally fighting for a job in this league, your number one job is to drop the gloves and fight that guy. Am I wrong?
This is basically their number two defenseman who has 45 points this year. This is a guy that plays with Quinn Hughes. They play the most on the defense core. What value does Tyson Jost have to the Buffalo Sabres? There's very little value. He does jack shit. He shouldn't even be playing in the NHL. Kevin Adams signing him to $2 million is the biggest goddamn joke I've seen in a long time. Okay? When you have a guy who's a fourth line player, okay, a fourth line player, you need to understand what is going on around you. Tyson Jost played 6 minutes and 54 seconds last night. He barely played. So when you have the opportunity and a Roenick, one of their top defensemen, basically drops his glove, how the hell are you not dropping your gloves? It's just a complete,
Sabreland in general and the players that you bring in. He didn't just drop his gloves and challenge him. Jost punched him in the face.
Yes.
Like he took a shot at him, and then so Roenick came back at him. Like Jost had a feisty shift, and then he came back, and the guy wanted to fight him, and then he got buried a couple times the next shift. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, Tyler Myers smoked him, and listen, I get it, but I'm like, holy shit, man, this is my whole point about a fourth line. Fourth line players need to understand what their role is. Like, what is Tyson Jost's role? What is his role? Tell me his first game as
a Buffalo Sabre. Do you remember his very first game as a Buffalo? I will never forget this, which is why I was so disappointed in him last night. Because his first game as a Buffalo Sabre when he got here, his game was in Montreal. Okay? And you know what he did? He fought. He fought that night. His very first game as a Buffalo Sabre. He fought. Okay, wasn't a great fight, wasn't a huge fight, doesn't have to be. These guys fighting isn't like the heavyweights fighting. They're not hurting each other, really. They're gonna wrestle a little bit, and then they're going to throw themselves. They're not hurting each other. These two guys fighting is the kind of fighting that the game should have in the game. That's the kind of fighting that it's spontaneous. It happens within the game. These guys aren't going to hurt each other that badly, and you move on, okay?
Yep.
But what he did last night, in my opinion, I wouldn't play him again for the rest of the year. Guy's fighting for his career, literally fighting for his career. And that's the kind of shit he's going to pull when you're in Vancouver and you're down 1-0 on the road and the second best defenseman on the team wants to fucking fight you. It is a direct representation of what this team has been for the last decade. And it's unfortunate. And I don't know if it's because they have other guys on the bench that they're afraid of on the other team, or they don't want to wake any sleeping giants over there, or what. I don't know what the problem is. But to me, I don't know if they're not allowed to fight. Connor Clifton was ready to go, though, last night. He had a shift where he was ready to go. I just can't believe. I can't. I'm sorry. I don't even know what else to say. I'm so disappointed. That pissed me off.
It's tough. It's a tough loss because I think at this point in time, you realize that the Sabres are out, and I just don't feel they're not technically 100% out, but I'm just saying they've got a long, long way to go in order for them to do something spectacular. And they're going to have to win the rest of their games to get in. And we both know that that's not happening. This team is not capable of winning, you know, that many games. The record that the Buffalo Sabres have, 33-32-5, is probably where they should be. Probably where they should be. There's clear cut holes in the roster that other teams, that when you look at them, you know, they almost look like they have a lesser roster than the Sabres, and they still find ways to win. And I don't know what it is. I've watched a lot of hockey.
Why didn't Tage Thompson deke that when he toe dragged the guy at the end there? Why did he try to pass that?
Open net goal. I don't have a problem with that. And he absolutely.
I'm asking, by the way, I'm asking that question for someone.
Sick.
Yeah, he did. Someone asked me that question. I'm not criticizing, but I did ask that question at the same time. I'm thinking to myself, why doesn't he pull that to his backhand and roof it, or just shoot it instead of force that pass? He's fucking
the shot angle. I don't think was there on the shot. I know exactly what you're talking about. And if you do slide it across, the person that you're sliding it across to has literally a tap in back door, and that's kind of the thought there. I don't see, it's just the issues that I have. It seems like the Sabres are giving up opportunity to score just like they did in that situation. But it just, you know, just seems like they're fighting an uphill battle, this team, all the time. And listen, I mean, you very clearly saw a very talented team. Watching their number one power play in Vancouver, they had multiple scoring chances on their power play. Quinn Hughes, and I will say this, that I have not seen him play a lot since he's come into the league. He plays out in Vancouver. I'm not staying up till 10:30 at night to watch him play. You know, yes, I get to see some highlights here and there, but I can't believe how good he is. I can't believe he is ultimately one of the top forwards in the NHL playing defense, is basically what he is. He's a forward that can actually skate defense or backwards and defend. And
did you see him hit Olofsson last night? Steps up at the blue line and hits Olofsson. He gets back. He's so fast. He just gets back right away. Sabres had a 2-on-1, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, here comes this jet in a black jersey, and he just gets all the way back. Now it's 2-on-2. It was absolutely incredible to watch. Like you, I haven't seen a ton of games where you're focusing in on him when he doesn't have the highlight reels, so you're just kind of seeing what he does offensively. But there's no question in my mind he's the Norris Trophy winner this year. Zero. He's up there with Cale Makar. I mean, he and Cale Makar are very, very similar hockey players. You see their power play work the puck around last night?
The switching that they do with speed, it's kind of like, I'm like, what's going on here? I just, that, you know, my thought when I was watching this is, you know that they want to work it off one side. You know they want to work it off Miller's side. There's a lot of movement, but there's pieces that are in play. They're looking for tip passes in front of the net. They're looking for cross box passes for a one timer. They're looking for switching with Quinton Hughes up top. Like there is,
they're
have
shooting for feet plays in the half wall to hit, to redirect.
That's right.
They are incredibly well coached. They have an unbelievable coaching staff. Adam Foote, Rick Tocchet, and the crazy guy there from Minnesota. He was in Pittsburgh. What's his name?
Mike Yeo?
Yeah, isn't that their assistant coach?
Yes. Yeah. Tough loss. You know, the Sabres were right there. They worked. They worked hard. You have to give it to them. They gave everything that they had. You know, Levi played well. They pushed. They just, quite frankly, it looks like they just don't have enough. You know, they just got beat by a little bit better hockey team is what it looked like. You know, Rasmus Dahlin, I don't know if you what you have to say about him, but he's next level, man. I mean, he is absolutely off the chart next level in how he plays this game. His ability to handle the puck, his poise, his pass, it's everything. It's a pleasure to watch him. And I just wish that this team could support him.
I think they did by going and getting Bo and Byram. Like, those two guys together are just, when they're snapping the puck back and forth together, I mean, once they click and get that real chemistry and some comfort together over a long period of time and into next season, it's going to be a nice pairing to watch for a long time. Like, he's unbelievable. I mean, I'm watching him out there and I'm thinking, what are you going to pay this guy if we're going to keep him? Because the two of them have to love playing together.
I mean, they are an incredible pairing, okay? And, you know, Dahlin, who's, what, 23 years old, and Bowen Byram's 22 years old. You got an Owen Power who's turning 22, or if not 22 already. Like, I mean, there's a lot of awesome pieces. Right now, it's, you know, there's got to be some maturity that is brought into the forward unit. I really do believe that. We're just lacking just a little something. And I know that, you know, Kevin Adams, you know, wants to be patient because, you know, for years and years and years and years with this organization is GMs have made, you know, tough decisions, stupid decisions that's basically cost the team and put them back. And then you have a new guy come in and he has a new philosophy. And then, I mean, Kevin Adams wants, he understands that he's got youth. Like, I look at Zach Benson, like, I look at him, they're shining the camera on him, talking about he's back in his hometown, family and friends are all there. And I'm looking at this kid, he's 18 years old. He's a friggin' baby. He's literally a baby. And he's super wicked at what he does. He's a hell of a hockey player. But unfortunately, we're not going to get the real Zach Benson until he's 23. So we've got to wait. You got to be patient. JJ Paterka, you can really see the talents on this kid is just through the roof. I think he's got still another gear, another upside to what he is providing for this team right now. And guess what? We've got to wait. We've got to wait for him just to continue to improve and get better and mature. And you could say that about a lot of players. You know, what's going to happen with Savoy? What's going to happen with Yari Kulich? What's going to happen with players like this? Are they going to be inserted into the lineup next year? Is that going to be our additions to our team? And it just seems like we're there, but we're just not there. And I just don't know how or what we're missing.
Before we get to JR, all I'll say is this. There's one optimistic way you can look at the Sabres right now in the standings, and that is that they have, right now, they are ahead of teams like New Jersey, Pittsburgh. You needed them to be ahead of Montreal. Didn't see this coming out of Ottawa. And you needed them to be ahead of Columbus, right, at the start of the year. Detroit was another team. The Islanders were uncertain. I don't think people thought Philly was going to be holding that spot for an entire season, if at all this season, right? So I think you said it best. The Sabres are right where they're supposed to be. And it's just disappointing that there wasn't enough done to put them over that edge, because these teams that are ahead of them, it's just a few pieces. It's not like it's five, six pieces. It's just a few pieces. So that's what's most bothersome. And then that's where all the spotlight gets put on Kevin Adams again this offseason. I'm not saying, and I'm not saying it's been mistake after mistake after mistake. I'm just saying there have been some decisions that you regret, and you don't have the luxury of making those same mistakes this off season. Just like you don't have the luxury of calling the wrong attorney if you get in a car crash. You have one shot at it. And if you get hurt in a car crash, don't make a mistake that you're going to regret. Call Salino Law. They're the only number you need to call. And it's really easy. 888-888-8888. Off-season free agents may not answer the Sabres call, but Salino Law will always answer your call. Car crash, call Salino.
What's up?
Where are you today?
In Las Vegas.
Go on.
Just taking a little fun break, going to play some golf, hang out. Last week I was in Chicago selling the shit out of my whiskey in the wild. It was pretty crazy.
Is that what you're out there for now? Because you got it all on. You're going to golf. You look like you're all sponsored up, like you're ready to go out and hit the links of the PGA.
Hey, listen, I'm coming on with one of the best podcasts in the world. I gotta look the part, man. I gotta sell myself.
You said it, not me.
Yep, I did say it.
Can I be honest with you? I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
The Chris Simon news kind of fucked me up yesterday a little bit.
It's really, 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 really saddening. I used to work out with Chris in LA with TR, Goodman, Chelly, Bob Probert. We all worked out together. And he was just one of the greatest guys ever. And tough as nails, but just, again, just like most tough guys, just the greatest guys off the ice. Just can't believe it, to tell you the truth. It still doesn't even compute. I don't even believe it.
I didn't know him at all. I didn't know him at all, but I obviously played against him, yeah. lined up beside him several times, was grateful that I never had to fight him. But, I mean, like I said, I never met him, but I just automatically relate to him because of his role in the game. Now, he had a much longer career than I did, but I don't even know which angle to go on that. I just sat just kind of in disbelief that another... And I don't want to exclude Konstantin Koltsov from this conversation because we spoke a little bit about his death yesterday, but come to light today that it was a suicide, right? So it's just I don't even know how to put words on it. But
do we know how to tell?
He was a great guy. That's all I ever heard about Chris Simon.
Do we know what happened to Čechmánek? Because there's another guy, Čechmánek, the goaltender. Do we know how he passed? A few months ago?
When did that happen?
Yeah, Roman Čechmánek earlier this year. Amazing. Oh, like crazy.
I didn't know that. I don't even think I realized Roman Čechmánek passed away.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, like, I mean, very unexpected.
What do you attribute this to, JR? You know, listen, I mean, when you hear the
are you
the
talking
news
Simon specifically?
Of Chris Simon.
Riff?
What's that?
Nothing. Go. I was just saying, are you speaking of Simon specifically?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm speaking of, you know, obviously, you know, going back to, you know, Bugard, the Wade Belak,
Rick Rippon,
those, you know, situations and, you know, deaths came, you know, kind of like piled on.
Miller, right, too, same thing. God, yeah.
You know, and Andrew and I were talking about this the other day, or, you know, actually yesterday we were talking about this, and, you know, it's a somber day. It's really, I played against Chris Simon. Obviously I can still remember playing against him when he was playing for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds in the OHL. And I was just absolutely scared out of my wit because he had set this aura about him that he was mildly insane and just like a killer out there. And, I was terrified. I really was. You know, I was 17 years old. He was 19, and, you know, knowing what he did throughout his NHL career and how many fights that he had throughout his career. And, you know, Andrew and I were just talking about, you know, CTE and, you know, would this have any bearing on, you know, what's happening with these players? So,
yeah, I mean, there has to be some sort of CTE. I mean, it just doesn't happen where guys like this become so depressed, or almost the demons are taking over them. And that's what they say that the CTE does. You would think that the scarring on some of these guys' brains are just massive, and just again, you've, and you know what, retiring from the game is hard. And sometimes, you know, some people aren't prepared to retire and find hard times away from the locker room and away from the game. But the CTE has to be part of that equation.
So here's a question I posed to Craig yesterday, and I'm comfortable talking to you guys about it, but I don't know that I would bring it up outside of this forum right now anyway. And I'll ask you guys honestly. Someone in the media last night tweeted about, you know, Sportsnet celebrating the Reeves-Delorier fight on the same day as Chris Simon passing. Now, there's no direct correlation to Chris Simon fighting and his suicide, okay? At least you can't prove it. You can't prove that there's a direct correlation. You can assume it. Yes. But my point is, should we be a little more cautious when we celebrate players like Matt Rempe and Ryan Reeves and all these other tough guys in the game today because of what some of the other tough guys from your era and beyond are dealing with? And how much responsibility does the league have on this by just not taking fighting out of the game?
So you're an opponent of having fighting completely out of the game?
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm just asking the question. I'm going to be honest with you. I sound like a fucking hypocrite on this topic because I don't know where I stand, because I know what hockey is and isn't. No, it's fighting.
Okay, is fighting a part of hockey?
Is it? It is.
Yes.
Okay. That's it. And
it's because it's within the rules.
That's right.
It's within the rules.
That's right.
So that's it.
You know, and this might be a terrible, terrible kind of way to just analyze it. It's like driving a car. Okay, they make you wear a seatbelt. It's a law right now to wear a seatbelt. There's a lot of people that don't want to wear a seatbelt, but they have to wear a seatbelt. But still, people die and get hurt. Right? It's almost like it's tough to prevent it, but they're trying to prevent it by making you wear a seatbelt. So in hockey, it's such a physical sport. Even if you take the fighting out of it, I still think the brain is going to go through a massive amount of trauma. I mean, you guys know what it feels like when you hit the boards and your head shatters around. You don't have to just get punched in the head to get really injured bad. You can just in time wear down. I don't think you take a big part of the game out. I think you do what the league has done, and they have literally changed the rules to really to take away the craving to fight, or the game is at a pace now where fighters can't make it. So I think it's a hard question. I don't think they should take it out. And I think the players play the game knowing exactly what they're getting into. And that's their life and that's their sport. And they love to do what they do, even knowing the consequences.
And I think that's the conversation of, you know, when Petey and I were talking yesterday, we had a good chat about this. And, you know, we talked about Matt Rempe, how, you know, he's kind of in a way being paraded around in the media because he's the new enforcer out there and he's fighting all these guys. And, you know, there's, you know, Petey right away goes to the protection of these players. Like, he's just kind of like, you know, he wants to protect these guys. And my thought was, every one of these guys know what they're getting themselves into. This is part of the job. It's like, you don't play football and say, we're not allowed to have hitting. You know, you don't go into boxing as a young person and say that I don't want to get hit in the head with a punch. I mean, you're not going to play rugby and not mm-hmm. get hit. And I mean, these are the consequences. These are the things that I think that you have to realize and buy into when you're a professional athlete. Ultimately, you are an entertainer. There's going to be many, many, many players that walk out of this game unscathed with no real injuries, with no real surgeries. There's going to be a lot of those guys, but there's also going to be another side of this game where you're going to have players that are dealing with injuries and dealing some of them a lot more severe than others.
And the crazy thing is they still don't know everything about concussions. They still can't see CTE until they actually go in. Once you pass away, they can't see it. Right. So it's always that question. And until the science and the medical science improves and they can figure out more and diagnose like a CTE more, it's always going to be, hey, listen, either you're playing the physical sport or you're not. You're afraid to get CTE. You're afraid to get like all the concussions. You know what? Don't play contact sports. Do something different. And I agree with Riv 100%. It's a it really sucks. But Chris Simon probably would play it the same way. That's knowing him. No matter what, he'd do the same thing. Let's go to something happy. Let's go to something happy.
I'll tell you the first thing I wanted to talk to you about yesterday before the Chris Simon news came out was Netflix announcing that they're going to be following around 10 to 12 players. And we were sitting.
Oh, yeah.
We were sitting talking about players that we would love to see in today's game. But I mean, JR, if this was around when you were playing, I don't think there's a doubt in anyone's mind that you would have been followed around by a crew.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I would have been the first guy. No question. I've been the first guy that they came up to and then I probably have the most edits on the floor of all the cuts. It'll be like, you follow me for one season. It'll be like the last dance from the Bulls. They had like a 10 part series.
JR, where was the wildest place that you played? The place that you just kind of like enjoyed yourself the most, you know, That would have been a great show for, you know, the Netflix series.
Probably my first 4 years in Phoenix when I went to Phoenix. Keith Tkachuk was the captain. Craig Janney was there. I don't know if you know a guy named Bobby Corkum, who is just one of the funniest guys of all time. Jim McKenzie, you know, and we all know Big Mac. You know, he's one of the greatest guys in the world, and just nuts. I tell you, there was a time during the 98 season, and for some reason, myself, Keith Tkachuk, Bobby Corkum, Craig Janney, before every road game, so we'd fly into the other town, and we would go out, and we would just get hammered until like 3 in the morning before every road game. And because we were winning, we were scoring goals. And I remember just being absolutely dead tired, but we're on a 10 game win streak. I was on a 10 point streak, and all of a sudden we started losing. So we were trying to get it back, and we were still going out. And then Bobby Smith, our GM, figured out that we were doing, brought us all four up to his office and literally blamed us and told us we were all losers and degenerates and alcoholics, and get our asses together, get ourselves in the bar. And I think it was Keith Tkachuk said, "Hey, listen, Bobby, you do your job up here in the office. We'll do our job on the ice. Tell us how to do our job." It was so funny.
Did you ever play with Joey Juno?
I did. I played with Joey Juno in Phoenix. Yep.
So super weird guy. Played with him in Montreal. I don't know if you feel the same way, but he's a different bird.
Yes, he is.
Super insanely off the
chart. The
rocket
scientist, fuck.
Like, He's a rocket scientist, and he was telling me, I was sitting with him one day and we had a long chat, and he was telling me how to build a floater plane. Like, he actually built his plane from scratch.
Yeah. I that does not surprise me.
You know, and I'm just kind of looking at him like, okay, like what do you mean built it? And he's like, I built it from scratch. Wires, everything that went into the plane, I built it. And I was just like, you just get to see. He was such an interesting person to talk to, because he's, you know, his interests were very unique and something that I basically can't really relate to.
Why are you laughing?
Because I'm just picturing Riv trying to make his own plane and say, I'm not going in that plane.
I can't even make a airplane out of paper.
Riv's propeller ends up on the back of the plane.
Oh, God. Why isn't this thing starting?
You know what time of year it is? It's March Madness time, and I have two words for you. Hoops Hangout. Starting Thursday, March 21st through Sunday, March 24th, and Saturday, April 6th, it's the College Basketball Tournament Watch Parties at Seneca Niagara.
Catch college basketball tournament action with your friends during March and April in your one-of-a-kind viewing area at Seneca Niagara. To reserve your spot, go to SenecaNiagaraCasino.com.
Nothing else comes close. John Tortorella does it again. He does it again. He makes an example out of a player and sits him. And I just like, this kind of rubs me the wrong way, JR. I don't know how you feel about it, but, you know, captain, it's a pretty tough task to be sitting your captain with 15 games left in the season.
Yeah, and they win.
Yeah, and they won. Exactly. I mean, everybody else kind of got the message. But I don't see Sean Couturier being a John Tortorella type player, the way that he plays. I would think that John Tortorella would just shake his head at watching tape of Couturier play the game. And I say, well, that
describe to me then what kind of player you think that he is.
I think he is a defensive, very standoffish, positional player. I don't think he is a exceptional worker. I think he has the ability to turn it on and look good, but he's too on and off for me, right? As a player, he's okay offensively. I think he's more known as a penalty killer type of guy, but he seems a very quiet person, a guy that wouldn't be comfortable in a locker room yelling at somebody or calling them out or getting their team going. He doesn't jump out the screen, and I don't know him. I'm just seeing by his facial expressions on the ice. I don't see him very verbal on the ice, and I definitely don't see him very physical on the ice. And John Tortorella, you guys know, is an in your face, energetic type of player coach. He likes energy. I mean, just look at him, and
I'm not disagreeing with you on the type of player that Couturier is, but I always thought that earlier in his career, I thought he was like a really, like, not a really hard to play against, not necessarily physical, but just very hard to play against. And
defensively, because he's frustrating. He's not hard to play against. He's frustrating to play against.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
I think there's two different things. I would much rather be a play against a frustrating player than a hard player to play against, because I know I'm going to feel pain. You know, hard player to play against, you know?
Well, so where does this lead to? Because, I mean, he and Daniel Briere have quite a relationship, and I think he lived with Briere his rookie year, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not saying that has any bearing on the decision or not, but there's obviously going to be a conversation between player and general manager. Or, I mean, at this stage of the season, do you just shut up and take it on the chin and worry about it after the year? How do you handle this?
I just don't know if just like poor play, he would do that to his captain. There's got to be something more underlying than just, I mean,
I think the Philadelphia Flyers have been struggling immensely lately, JR. And, you know, if you're going to sit somebody where it's going to have a ripple effect throughout the locker room, there's not a whole lot of guys on the roster that you can do that to that would be shocking. And I think that, you know, Sean Couturier is a really, really good hockey player. He defends very, very well. He's been a good player in this league a long time.
Yes, yes.
But there's no one in this lineup. Like, there's not one player in this entire lineup that would make a difference at all if you sat him out. And I think that's why, you know, John Tortorella wanted to spark his team by doing something that was completely maybe uncharacteristic, or maybe that's
this is more Herb Brooks-ish than it is legitimate reasoning.
I would say it's a bit of both. You know, I looked up his statistics, and, you know, he hasn't scored in 15 games. In the last 10 games, he has 3 assists. He is not producing for a $7.75 million player. They need more if this team is going to solidify a playoff position and get into the playoffs. They need more from their top players. And Sean Couturier is a top player on the Philadelphia Flyers, and he's not performing up to the capabilities, I think.
And what's scary right now, too, is they've been in the playoff picture for a long time, and now you have two teams that are crawling right up behind them. And very surprisingly, the Washington Capitals, who we threw out, or at least I threw out of the playoffs 3 months ago. And now all of a sudden they're a couple points out, you know, in the playoff spot. And you're right, Riv, if they don't get this together, it was a big win for them tonight against Toronto. But if they don't get this going tonight, or like soon, they're definitely going to be out of the playoffs, not even just in the top three spot. They'll be out of the playoffs.
How about what Patty Kane's doing, though?
No, I saw him at Chelly's retirement play. He looked amazing. The goals that he's scoring, the points he's putting up. I mean, Detroit needs that right now. I mean, they're right there. Right, it can go either way, but Patrick Kane is as electrifying and as dangerous, and is still one of the best playmakers in the game.
Just moved last night into either tied for fifth or moved solely into fifth for USA born game winning goals.
Okay.
Do you have any idea who number one is?
Me,
for sure.
I got to be up there. I'm 16th all time in the history.
Do you know how many game winning goals you have?
Yeah, 96.
Are you looking at it?
No, I am. No, I'm just okay. No, I so think I have 90. I think I have 94 or 96. 96, I have, and I rank 16th all time in the history of the game.
Okay. Are you the sole member at number one?
Well, are you going to take Brett Hull as the American or as a Canadian, because he was born in Winnipeg?
Well, he's not on the list, so I don't know. I don't know which way to put him.
He's American, not, man. Claiming him.
Nope. Pat LaFontaine, he didn't play enough games. Mike Modano didn't. Keith Tkachuk.
Mike Modano and you are tied.
Really?
Yeah.
At 96?
92. Give your head a shake. Shit. You weren't that fucking good.
Should have had 96.
JR. Modano, Parise has 83, Bill Guerin 77, and Patrick Kane now at 74.
Oh.
Now, granted, Parise and Kane played in a much different overtime era.
Yes.
I mean, you were 5-on-5 overtime in ties.
Yeah, correct.
Right? So, yeah. Bit of a difference there. But anyway, I thought NHL Network That's showed cool. that today because cool. clearly cool he's stat. Moved up the ranks. But listen, man. I wanted him here in Buffalo. He didn't sign here, but everyone shit on us. Well, shit on me. I wanted Pat Kane here, and everyone said he's done. And I've been very quiet about not just saying I told you so or the Sabres should have signed him, because it wasn't the Sabres' choice. It's just more the people. And I think they were weighing more heavily on the side of, you know, what had Backstrom had gone through and other players of that had his surgery. But I mean, all players aren't the same. And then you see him skating with those in those videos before he came back to play. He looked unbelievable. He looked mobile, shifty. And then here he is. He's tearing it up.
If you would have told me 3 years ago that Ron Hart would be a 50-goal scorer, I would ask, what kind of crack are you smoking?
JR, you're a 50-goal guy. multiple times. Do you jam up when you get to 48 and start thinking, man, I really want to hit 50? Because it seemed like he kind of went stale at 39.
100%. You start pressing so hard for that. There was a couple of years ago, I think it was like 6 years ago, Patrick Kane had 41 or 42 goals or 43 goals with like 16 games left, right? And I'm sitting there thinking, well, we got another Hawk that's going to score 50. And you could just tell he was pressing because we were just talking about Patrick Kane. He was pressing. He was shooting everything from everywhere. He was forcing it. He was thinking about it. He was, you know, doing things uncharacteristic to the plays that you would see Patrick Kane make, right? And he came up, I think he might have scored 47. I don't know if you're looking at Patrick Kane's stats. I think it was one of his highest goal score. It was his highest goal scoring season that he had. But you see it, you get in range, and all of a sudden you start thinking about it every game, every shift. You know, you get nervous that you're not going to make it. You put a lot of pressure on yourself. There's no question about it.
46 goals he had that year.
46, yep. And he had 16 games left, and he was at like 44.
So here's the question. He passed the puck in Buffalo. He had 39 goals. They had an empty net. He came down on a 2-on-1, and he passed it to his teammate, and his teammate scored. He didn't want to hit 40 with the empty netter.
Yep.
Then he went like 4 or 5 games without scoring. And then he scored a couple and hit 40 and then 41. And then he's been on a rip ever since. But here's my question. If he gets to 49 and then has a chance at the empty netter, does he swallow his pride and bury it?
No, no. Oh, no. He's burying it. He will swallow his pride. He will bury that in back of the net because a 50-goal score is worth about another $1.5 million, $2 million in your bank account in your next contract. I mean, it just is. I mean, how many 50-goal scorers are there? There's not many. So, yeah, hell yes, you do. I had this question posed to me when I was at 499. And one of the reporters asked me, if you have an empty net, will you put your 500th goal in the empty net? And my answer was, no, I don't want my most famous, my most cherished goal to be an empty netter. And so, like, a week later, I throw the puck, I throw it around the glass, and it goes off the dasher board and goes to the front of the net. And actually, I think it was Alex Auld was the goaltender. He knocked the puck in himself. So it was like the ugliest goal of all time, and it was my 500th goal. It was the ugliest 500th goal ever in history. Like out of all 45 players that ever did it, that was the ugliest.
I was on the bench then.
Oh, you were on the team, Riv.
Yeah. River's there.
Yeah.
And then they know what they did. They took the glass out of the boards, the dasher, and all the players signed it. And I have it at my house. It's the actual plexiglass with all my boys. Riv, you're on it. You signed it.
They gave you the glass?
Yeah. They gave me the glass. The whole sheet? The whole sheet. Yeah. The whole sheet of glass. It was pretty cool.
What are you supposed to do with that?
That's jammed in JR's garage somewhere.
That's just... No, but if I had a sports room or like a good guy's dungeon in there, maybe I would do it, like maybe I'd put it against the wall and create like a little shrine for it. But I don't have a man cave at all. So you're right, Riv. It is in a box somewhere in storage.
Do you not have any memorabilia that you like collected over the years?
I do. I have a lot of stuff. You should see my stick collection. I have. I never realized that I collected so many sticks over the years from guys as I was playing. I used to get them for Brett, but then I just would just grab them. Guy Lafleur and some of the older guys that I was just loved playing against, Dino Ciccarelli, who I was crazy about playing because he was such a pain in the ass. You know, just sticks were always a thing for me. I was not like a big jersey. I did swap jerseys with Mike Modano one time on the ice after after the season was over. They beat us in the second season. I think in that it was that first season, Viv, right? When we were with Dallas, we played Dallas in the second round, and we had that four overtime game, and I thought we were going to win that game, and we lost. Mike Modano kind of swapped shirts. I've never been a big memorabilia guy, but it's huge. Memorabilia right now is just crazy. They just had a big show in Chicago, and some of these things that these people have are mind-blowing.
Last question for you, and then we'll let you go golfing. Who will be wild card number two in the East and the West? That's basically all that's really available.
Wild card number two?
Mm-hmm.
I am going to go on a limb and say Detroit.
Okay. Detroit.
Okay. That's who I think in the East. In the West.
There's two ways I can go on this one. Vegas missing the playoffs would be absolutely epic. I don't toss that word around very often, but that would be maybe one of the craziest things we've seen in the last decade when it comes to team failures. Stanley Cup champ, tons of million over the cap. They go and make moves at this year at the deadline, and they miss the playoffs. I understand injuries play a role. I understand that.
Yes.
But that would be, I don't want to say catastrophic, that's dramatic, but it would be from the standpoint of everyone
shocking.
Saying,
shocking.
Shock, there you go, shocking.
It would be shocking. They have too good of a team. I'm not going to let injuries get in the way with that. But Minnesota, when they pulled Marc-Andre Fleury in overtime, which I thought was a brilliant move, which was unbelievable. It was so cool. And understood that they need those points. Minnesota's been rattling off wins like crazy. That Kaprizov is playing out of his mind right now. That win in overtime when they pulled Marc-Andre Fleury to get those 2 points. John Hines. Okay, yeah, Jersey. It was such a cool thing, I think, as a team. I could see those things kind of propelling a team. And I would think Minnesota is going to catch Vegas. And I don't know if Mark Stone is close to coming back into the lineup, but he's a big part of that team that they're missing. But if Vegas misses the playoffs, holy, what a meltdown.
Yeah, the team's just too good really to miss the playoffs. Like, they were one of the top teams in the league for a large part of the year, and then they've had a really, really, really tough patch because they've been dealing with so many injuries. But, you know, you look at their lineup, you know, the lineup healthy would probably be the best lineup in the league.
Well, let me ask you something. What's better for them, to finish third in their division and play Edmonton, or finish wild card number two and play Vancouver or Winnipeg?
I don't like any of them.
I don't like any team in the entire West. Winnipeg, Colorado, Dallas, Vancouver, Edmonton, Vegas Golden Knights. The Nashville Predators right now are like on fire. They're 8-0-2 in their last 10 games.
Why'd you skip over LA?
Because I don't think LA is, I don't think they're the real deal. I really don't. I think that they're not quite where they need to be in the elite echelon of teams.
Do you think their goaltending is good enough?
I haven't seen enough about LA. I just know that they're a good team, but they're hot and cold, and they're not very consistent in their play.
I still think Vegas will turn it on. So to answer your question, Petey, I think Vegas is going to hold on to that spot, but Minnesota is going to give it a good run. There's no question about it. St. Louis has done a good job of staying in that race too. But what you said, Riv, about Nashville is one of those teams that could be like Florida was last year. Get in late, you know, like LA did back in 11 or 12, where they were the last team in and they just ran the playoffs as a 16 seed. I can see Nashville being a team like that. And nobody's talking about them. Nobody. It's crazy.
6-2-2 in their last 10.
Yeah. And they went on a run where they won like 8 or 9 out of 11 about 2 months ago. So they're putting streaks together, man. They're not losing like a lot of games in a row, like Detroit was doing, like Jersey was doing, you know. I mean, Jersey just played themselves right out of the playoffs in the month of February, beginning of March.
It was Crazy. Lindy Ruff's fault. It was all Lindy Ruff's fault.
Of course. But it was also Lindy Ruff's fault when they had the season that they had last year, right? It's amazing. Just amazing. But I think Greener will do good there. We actually have Biz Nasty. We got Paul Bissonnette on. Later on tonight, so that's sure to be interesting and fun, because that's what Biz does. Is I can't wait to. I want to ask him, how in the fuck did he pull this off, from scoring 4 goals in a game, barely playing in games, to being one of the most sought after social media guys.
One of the biggest personalities out there in professional sports. I would have to say, to say that in professional sports, right?
Yes, 100%. A guy that gets a free pass to say whatever he wants, and it doesn't matter, because people just love listening to this guy. And you know why? Because he's fun. He's energetic. He's a happy-go-lucky guy, and he's not an asshole. He's just fun. He says things, but he says it in a manner that you're like, that's funny.
He relates on a bunch of different levels. He relates with the players because he was an NHL player, and he played in the NHL. And he also relates to just the fans, because I think he actually is a fan.
Yeah.
100%. And he's quirky, and he puts himself down, and he's just really interesting. And here's the thing. What I really praise him is he speaks very well.
Yes.
His thoughts that he has are excellent.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So you add it all up.
He's one of the only ones I enjoy listening to on television.
Do you remember the ice bucket challenge years and years ago?
Of course.
Okay, so go watch his ice bucket challenge. Okay, he had a helicopter take him to the top of a glacier.
I saw it.
They dumped him.
Yeah, I saw it. Well, that's how he got that. That's probably what got him started. So good for him. So we have Biz on tonight, 7 o'clock. Eastern time. Yeah, nofilter.net, Snipes and Stripes, baby.
All right. Thanks for your time today, JR.
All right, boys. Love you.
That'll do it for After the Whistle, presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close. Reminder, check out SenecaNiagaraCasino.com for all the upcoming events with Seneca.